my pleasure to talk to you today about the Windsor Organic Research on Transition study. This is a multi-investigator project that includes people from also several institutions. The original group of investigators listed on the top was led by Kathy Eastman as the project coordinator, and Ed Zaborski, who was the hired as the coordinator and actually was surprised to find out shortly thereafter that included being the plot manager. So you see Ed pictured there in the bottom and really pulling double duty and doing good service to us. The other folks, Darren Eastburn, is in crop science, and they're both in the Illinois Natural History Survey, myself and John Massounis. Also in the project is a really critical group of folks contributing to the outreach with Leslie Cooper Van and Deborah Kavanaugh Grant and Dan Anderson. And as any project lives and breathes based on really the graduate students, one of them is here today, Carmen, my student, where raise your hand to embarrass yourself there, pulling their weight. And then we've really worked hard to pull in interest from other researchers along the way listed in the bottom. The history of the plots, of how this study got going, is there was a group of us that had, many of us had had systems experience working in various places who were interested in organic and getting that going. This rising tide of research opportunities with new monies coming around was an opportunity we saw, and also agitation in the state by extension folks who were really expressing an interest and articulating a need for outreach-based information for growers in organic in our state, I think we thought legitimized our efforts. We had Nancy Creamer come to talk about the CESS program, and she said, you know, to really sort of form our group, we ended up committing and getting going before we had any funding as a team, and she felt like that sort of baptism by fire meant that they were all really committed. And she said, you know, if you get along and agree before you have money, things are going to go better. So one reason we decided to do that is that, you know, we knew we didn't have much except for common interests, but then also at that time we had a person who was an agronomist, John Shaw, who said he would care for the plots, and he had lots of farming knowledge and experience. So we felt that subsidy of human talent could let us basically make a commitment to go for it with the project. We actually ceded 6 acres to rye cover to start a transition in 2002, just sort of blindly. In that winter, we started really working very intensively with farmers that many of us already had pretty good relationships with to refine a design using a participatory process. And then we were really darn lucky to get funded in 2003. And so we could really get going with full steam on our project. We, though, with sort of the perfect storm, I would say, that probably many of you encountered of budget shortfalls in a lot of states and pressures, the Illinois Natural History Survey, like a lot of places, had a buyout package and motivated John Shaw to retire. So we then found ourselves in the position, I think, of really transition farmers going through transition, where we had really to capitalize secure equipment and learn how to farm simultaneously. So we really related, but we were just darn lucky that we had good mentors by working with expert farmers. We, at the time we started the study, thought that it was strategically wise to have this group of people from multiple institutions. And I mention this because I think in the long run for us, this made it actually more difficult, I'm sad to say. The plots were sort of, because they weren't owned in this sort of atmosphere of branding where everybody needs to maximize credit for everything, made us not necessarily the project of any one individual entity. So we had trouble with securing help for farming, and then we got this beautiful piece of ground here you show. This is just a piece of geography that had great frontage for visibility, adjacent to natural areas and a pond that could do sort of landscape level studies, and even outbuildings and barns and extra space we thought could become a teaching center. But other people had designs on it too with all these pressures, so we fought off a highway interchange, a composting facility, but we know that this site really probably is in other people with more power, and since we're not necessarily owned by anyone who's going to fight for us, we don't really see that sort of our land tenure situation as a threat to us like it might be for someone renting. So I'm not going to talk a lot about outreach except for, I guess, say, and I'm kind of thinking in the, you know, really as these big projects go and this real essential need to do good outreach. And if the work that we do doesn't show up in useful formats, then why do we do it? You know, I mean, and so I think we have a lot of existing information already there that could be transformed. And in this project, while we had institutional or an outreach obligation, we didn't really have much funding in our grant. We were just darn lucky to have some really good relationships with people who had some momentum going in outreach. So I particularly want to mention, you know, we've worked hard to connect with the outreach extension experts in our state. We benefited very much by Deborah Kavanaugh Grant's participation, and she works with a group that's, I think their primary home is in Michigan State, but it's a multi-institution internet-based newsletter that collaborates with farmers. Our own sustainable ag programs did, we sort of embed an organic agronomy day inside the conventional mainstream crop department. And through that, that's really sort of for our own project saved, or you guys get some data today because we've done that, and I've been able to shake data out of people and have it in a electronic, therefore I consider tangible form. We've allowed other people to use the site to propel or enrich their events. Of course, things like this, professional meeting presentations. And then I wanted to mention eOrganic, which is now sort of, I think, the future for our team. We're one of the people getting funds for eOrganic, and we will be helping co-lead the vegetable crop component of this, one of these e-extension sites, and this eOrganic will be the repository for organic information. I think a lot of you in the room have been tapped. And if you haven't been re-tapped, you're going to be. We're finally getting organized, and I encourage everybody to contribute to this because, you know, we have now enough rope to hang ourselves, but if we can get this going, I think it'll be hopefully useful for everyone. So ask me more later if you're interested. So my original title was the longer title, where we're really looking at organic as a system of soil management, and I think we've already heard this today by many of the speakers. And really, that was the view of our group working collectively, thinking about it in this very traditional, classical way. These are just language out of the NOP standard, where this dilemma, in a practical sense, where they're charged with protecting soil and water for future generations, but then they get a list of what not to do. So I think something that we were all interested in is really these deeper connections and theories about how biologically based fertility works. And then trying to figure out how to make this practical for farmers using organic practices. We were not interested in comparing organic to conventional. We were interested in really how to optimize organic systems. We, through working with our farmers, wanted to work on systems that were relevant to farmers in Illinois, and by really working with growers who we considered expert because they'd been making and sort of setting the trends in business for over 10 years in organic, we found them active in Illinois in intensive vegetable cropping systems and in row crop systems. And we added a lay component because we found really that the intensive veggie guys, if they could afford extra land, were basically transitioning or moving their system so that they had a block of land to have about a third of that land in a lay or diversified pasture mix. I use the word lay because that's what you'll find a lot of the literature in these comparisons in the European language. But what I mean here is systems that have, you know, mixed component that could be part of an animal system. But ours, we really, you know, we're thinking of this vegetable system as our ultimate comparison once we transition with these sort of three flavors. We really had ideas that will be fleshed out as we go along, I think, in our analysis of economics and such, which you won't see today, where they really have different constraints, these kinds of production systems, where intensive market growers have immediate cash returns to very high-value crops. The way they look at their crops is very different than they don't really look at weight as much as quality. Over-application and non-access to inputs, or that access to fertility, is really different than the row crop guys who are, and we've already heard this, are sort of bracing for a decline in finances. They sort of mine their inherent fertility that they're carrying out of their conventional systems. In Illinois, most of these growers are shifting to food grade crops, so their yield expectations, particularly for the extractive corn crop, is lower, so that's a bit helpful. We made the assumption, in part just because we were fairly overwhelmed on the labor front, that the pasture was going to be used, as a lot of the organic farmers do, not being harvested, to be fed for animals, and we were mowing that to maintain control weeds. So here's sort of a schematic of this, what I've just described. And we consider it a systems design, but I know that that terminology is used in a lot of ways. So just to explain to you what we meant when we said that. Now, we were using participatory methods, and we were trying to have a system study that really was not a component comparison in any way. We were trying to optimize the systems in these three transition styles that were really tailored, we hope, to be as sort of models for best management practice kind of thinking. Inside each of these, then, transition trajectories, we embedded a fertility split. So during the course of the transition, we could only evaluate within the systems those fertility effects. And we also did not have entry point design, right? So we just start and we go. There's some weaknesses that you have in that kind of design, but it's also, we were already overcommitted with this to handle it. Then we're going, I think, and this is consistent with the Michigan kind of design, where we're looking as our sort of litmus test, the 2006, when we're through transition in our certification year, where we compare crop response in tomatoes and in peppers. We went a little bit crazy and embedded variety comparisons inside of that, which was probably a mistake, but especially now that we're managing 6 acres of tomatoes and peppers where we have to hand weed, it's not a good idea. So I'm going to give you sort of the really preliminary results. So you're seeing, as I'm seeing, sort of for a real rough cut, the first time we're trying to bring this information together, sort of what we learned during the transition and then results from the certification years, which are being comparisons. So John Masunis is the person who's really doing, with Isabel Rosa, a master's student, the weed work, looking at emerged weeds and seed bank counts. I don't have all the data from this. I'm just going to share for you sort of the data that I was able to obtain. Isabel is in Europe, and so we didn't get the recent workup. She's also a law student, so we're competing for her mental attention. You see here the comparison of the row crop on the left and the veggie system on the right. And you see shifts in the diversity of weeds through time and also weed abundance. The summary John sent was saying that weed pressure actually declined during this period, although I think you do see this is not true for some of the suites of weeds, the grasses and lamb's quarter, for example. Not included in this data, but I'll report to you that we did feel that the lay system during the transition was suppressing most of these annual weeds, but we saw particularly from the edges of plots movement of thistle. And that was very much, I think all of you know this, that the people in these sort of pasture components, these perennial phases, the perennial weeds move in. And that was certainly echoed by our farmer advisors were telling us this was going to get us even before it got us. So. The folks, the entomologists, were really looking at the predatory beetles and spiders, these arthropods, and they were interested in their ability to control pests and weed seeds and the like. And we were very lucky to have, during the first 2 years, John Lundgren do some very nice detailed work that I think has relevance to other folks working on refugia. So here we see the effect of diversity and surface cover. In 2003, that top line with the triangle is the lay component. So we have more cover, more protection, so we have more activity of the ground beetles. It's not so clear in 2004, but when you convert these data into the predator numbers, which is that's what they're tracking here in diversity, you see that this, you have day and night measurements on the left and the right, that this really, and this is no huge surprise, where we have this habitat quality maintained, we have a lot of protection and we have more of these beneficial arthropods. So I think that this has maybe relevance to our thinking now is how do you think about spatial manipulation in these diversified systems? And I think I see in some of the work in Oregon State this idea of refugia and I forget what they call them, beetle banks. So I think you could see how this, when you have the disturbed systems, though, you really, it's pretty hard on these critters. Darren Eastburn and Xinyi Marzano are working on the disease suppression connection and interested in that in terms of these systems. And they're both using just observed disease in the field and then greenhouse bioassays. During the transition, they were taking soils in the spring of the year and then doing bioassays with a variety of things. Here I show you the results for sudden disease syndrome for soybeans. And they saw a general suppression of SDS during the transition. No, and when I'm not telling you about differences between systems or fertilizer amendments, it's because we didn't see them. You know, they weren't there, so we're treating the data and average them. And this is reflected both in her root scores and in the foliar ratings. A caution, though, that Darren wanted me to make sure to share is that this is really hard to conclude over years with this kind of assay because it is a biological assay. You're bringing the soil in and manipulating it. So you don't have a continuous or standard control across time. Ooh, okay, 5 minutes. And so the soils questions, we're interested in not only to how soils change, but we're really hunting very hard, I think, for practical measures that we think we would like to deliver to farmers who are really thinking when they're pointed to soils, rotation as sort of the anchor of the system through which you manage your pests, your diseases, your weeds, and your fertility, they need some handholds. So we're looking at some of the sort of darlings, conventional measures. And I guess the hypothesis we have is that conventional measures might not work so well in that regard. So we're looking at measures of carbon and nitrogen metabolism. And then Carmen Ugarte's work, and I hope you didn't miss her talk yesterday, looking at nematodes, where the food web structure being very sensitive to shifts in nutrient cycling and composition, say bacterial and bacterial and fungal proportions, thinking that these biotic measures might be more sensitive than our conventional tests. So sort of before we go to our transition comparison, this is the soil from conventional soil test from the top soil, top 15 centimeters that was measured in 2003 in the spring at the beginning of the start of the study, and 2006 before we go into our conventional, certification year. And so you see in the green that the soil organic matter levels increased, and this is on average no difference between the transition strategy, the significant at the 10% level, and the quality, if you look at carbon and nitrogen ratios as a measure of that, seems to be improved. We accumulated PK and calcium magnesium in all cases, so all systems worked really well. The only place where we had a interaction or effective systems was within the lay, where it actually accumulated pH a little bit underneath there was a significant difference for pH only in the lay system where it accumulated or raised the pH. So here we'd say, fairly insensitive. So this suggests that we did well in terms of building soils, but there's not going to be a big difference in our outcome. So what did the biotic component say in our certification year? So here you have a picture, and this is looking good. Of course, this is a couple weeks later, you might have seen a couple weeds out there, right, Carmen? this is an intensive veggie system where we've done a lot of soil prep work. We almost died this spring putting in irrigation. So here's varietal differences and we have a comparison here of Classica, Roma, and Bellstar, where the plants at least thought that it was better to follow the lay transition strategy than the other two more intensive systems. I could go on and on about some of the varietal differences in the questions or the attributes that the farmers were actually interested in, who are market gardeners. So, the distribution of harvest across time was as interesting to them as was total net yield. Fertility interactions were apparent in the Bellstar and Roma varieties. You see the circles, which are the systems in the after the row crop transition and the veg crop, where we had these lower yields, were significantly improved where manure had been applied. That wasn't the case for compost or for the cover crop systems. Then for tomato quality variables, and I just crunched these and I haven't heard back from Nikki what she thinks. This is one of our recruited researchers, where we see effects, and this is no surprise to plant quality people, that variety had a significant effect on plant quality parameters. We had a fertility effect on plant quality parameters, and then we had also a rotation. But I don't think any of these quality parameters you could easily say are much, much better. I think in combination, taste, attributes, things like that are not fully reflected. We are trying to, we bootleg this entirely, and we're trying to bootleg nutrient density on these and the peppers as well. For disease suppression results during this year, Darren observed significantly different disease development for septoria, where we had less disease in the manured plots after pasture, and more disease expressed very strongly in the cash grain, where we hadn't had any amendment, any organic amendment applied. For anthracnose incidents, we had that same trend plus a very, and I should have been bold, I'm sorry, for the vegetable system on the far right, a lot more disease coming in. So that sort of summarized where it looks like we have suppressiveness for some of these diseases, where we have these richer, higher organic matter stocks, and conducive systems where we seem to be the biotic component anyway, saying that we're depleted a bit. So looking at some of Carmen's results here, and this is at the spring benchmark time before we really get into soil prep for the system, where you saw that conventional soil test data. So she sees the same or trends inside the system that suggest, I actually think, did I mix those things up? I think pasture's on the left. Is that right, Carmen? And I don't have a laser pointer. So the first one in pink, in rust, should actually be the pasture system, which definitely ran the richest, not significantly at this time, so this is in April. You see the nematode index there is the only one that's statistically significant at this time. That enrichment index is really this measure of available nitrogen and bacterial dominance in the system. So those components, or I guess the quality components, and later in the system, in July, for example, particular organic matter, those differences became statistically significant. So the quality parameters seem to be in agreement with some of the biotic indicators, it seems. We had sort of growing weed problems. How many more minutes? Okay. So you see on the far left here, that's our best performing soybean plot in 2007. You see grasses handed us our hat in this year. And we had statistically significant differences in soybean yield, pitiful yield, where after the pasture, and we always thought we saw this but didn't quantify, but I think we see the crops here quantifying for us, that transition was better for weed suppression. And we also have this interesting fertilizer effect where we have after manure some suppression. Compost, we have that's the significant difference. Maybe we actually imported some weed seed with that compost. We got it from a new composter in the state, so So in conclusions, this, the conventional tests, as we suspected, weren't that good at sorting, but they did show that we improved organic or soil quality and organic matter contents about 4% during that transition phase. We had shifts in weed diversity. We had, during the transition phase, we could improve things like predatory beetles, and it looked like we were having some disease suppressive capacity develop. Tomato yields. We do, if you, and I think this biology, which is kind of the cornerstone of a lot of thinking in organic systems, our biotic indicators really saw differences, and I think that they did see this improved or desirable benefit from pasture, and I think we saw those measures supported in disease and nematode indices. And then I have to acknowledge all the people who really worked very hard on this. Sorry.